You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. Today is Labor Day, and we're joined by the president of the AFL-CIO, John Sweeney, who's now in Los Angeles. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Can you talk about your plans for Labor Day?
Yes, well, I intend to do a number of things here in Los Angeles, starting off with a religious service with Cardinal Mahoney and many labor leaders and activists. They're expecting 2,000 people from different unions wearing their uniforms and bringing their tools and other distinctive identifications with the jobs they do. And then we're going to do a rally and going to focus on some of the issues such as stopping fast track trade authority, and then on to a couple of other labor related events, and off to Oakland and San Francisco for some events there as well today and tomorrow.
On Tuesday, you're beginning a campaign, a tour, is that right, with union presidents. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We're doing a bus tour around Northern California, meeting in local unions and at work sites with workers to explain to them how important the issue of trade is and how important it is for us to lobby our members of Congress against fast track until it includes core labor standards and environmental protections.
Explain what you mean by fast track.
That's to a move to give the president the authority to negotiate a trade agreement without having to get the approval of Congress. And we think that if he's going to have that authority, there has to be a requirement that core labor standards be a part of our trade agreement in both our countries, our trading partner, as well as our own.
Right now, we're talking about a national labor picture where 13.5% of all workers, 9% of the private sector are unionized. These are not very high figures. How are you going to unionize more workers in the United States?
Well, these numbers are, it's not the numbers that have declined, it's that the workforce has increased and we haven't kept up the pace of organizing new workers in new jobs as well as traditional jobs. We have been, over the past few years, more aggressively organizing and training new organizers for the long term, and I think we're reversing that trend very slowly, but I think that you're going to see a steady increase in union membership. There's an Associated Press poll out, I guess it's out yesterday, showing that the perceptions of unions is on the increase. And we think that with a number of the issues that workers are concerned about, such as the layoffs that are occurring in our country, that there is going to be more interest in joining unions, realizing that they can't resolve their problems by themselves.
There's a debate going on within the AFL-CIO, how much money to put into electoral politics versus organizing. Where do you stand on this issue, especially in light of the big defeat of Al Gore, which the AFL poured millions into his election?
Well, when we endorsed Al Gore, we knew that our members supported him, and the turnout from union households in the election was the highest probably that it's ever been in terms of union membership supporting a particular candidate. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough, and we have to continue to activate our membership at the grassroots level on the political issues, not just for national, but for state and local government as well. And we've been doing that. We've had a real active program over the past 6 years since I was elected, and it's shown by the increased number of union members who are voting and who are registering to vote. But in terms of what our priorities are, it is important that we be involved politically. Our members want us to be involved. And some of our members are Republicans and many are Democrats, but they all agree that the labor movement has to be out there electing people to office who support the working family agenda. But just as important, we have to build a stronger labor movement, and organizing has to be our top priority as well. And I think that we have the ability to do a good job at both. I think we're seeing more organizing activity going on with individual unions than we've ever seen. And we just have to do more organizing in order that we have more members to be active politically.
We're talking to John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, on this Labor Day. The president's immigration policy, he's going to be taking it on increasingly. What is your assessment of where the administration is going when it comes to immigration and their what looks like going to be a very strong push for guest worker programs?
We're not sure exactly where the administration is going on this issue. We know that it's going to be discussed between our president and the president of Mexico later this week. We are for full legalization of immigrants, and we think that immigrant workers should not be discriminated against and should be entitled to the same laws and the same benefits that other workers are. And so that's why we support amnesty. We're going to lobby in Congress for this, and I think that the president has had to slow down on whatever he's going to propose because he doesn't have the support in Congress. Guest worker, expanding the guest worker program just doesn't work. It just makes the problem worse in terms of how these people are exploited and how they're discriminated against. And
can you explain what guest workers are for those who are not familiar with it and what specifically the problems are?
Guest workers would be allowed to come and work for a set period of time. Some of this work would be in jobs that are seasonal, such as farm workers, but it could be in other industries as well. And it is just using these people to fill some temporary criteria, but not giving them the benefits of that other workers have. And we think that it's discriminating against these people. We think that the president of Mexico wants to treat workers in an equitable and fair way, and we hope that the administration will support that.
A study has just come out on the issue of drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, where it's been put out by Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, which says that what the Teamsters have endorsed and what's been promised if there's drilling in the Arctic, 750,000 jobs, is a tremendous overestimate, and it's something like 5% of that. What is your take on this with the Teamsters' big endorsement of drilling in the Arctic and the split this means for Teamsters versus environmentalists?
Well, I haven't seen the study yet, but I will be looking at it to see what we can learn from it. Individual unions take positions based upon how their members feel, and much of it is based upon their industry and their jobs. And I believe that the Teamsters are environmentally responsible and do want to protect the environment. But it's not just the Teamsters. There are other unions who feel the same way. And since we are a federation, I'm trying to balance the differences between different unions on this issue. And you'll be hearing more from us over the course of the next couple of months.
Now, the Service Employees International Union that you come from and the United Auto Workers have spoken out against the drilling. So how are you going to come up with a balance?
You'll have to wait and see.
What about military spending? President Bush, a big push to increase military spending, and specifically Star Wars. Will the AFL-CIO be taking a stand on whether military spending actually creates jobs?
We will be monitoring the administration's proposals on defense spending, and we will be watching to see if we think that they're attempting to appropriate more money than is necessary for defense. We are also watching closely to see what effect this has on programs, on other programs that are important to workers and to their families. And there's a wide range of issues, education and health care. We've been going through this debate all throughout the budget process, and now we're learning about the wipeout of the surplus and the effect that that might have on Social Security. So it really requires looking at the whole picture.
AFL-CIO has come out with a statement encouraging people to come out to the World Bank IMF protests. I wanted to get your take on Genoa, the protests there, what they meant. The young man who was killed, Carlo Giuliani, I understand he was the son of a union organizer. What the AFL's plans are exactly for the end of September in Washington?
We plan to be active in the peaceful protests that will be taking place in Washington. We speak out strongly against any of the terrorist activities, as well as sometimes the reaction of police authorities. But if you look back to Seattle, when the WTO met in Seattle, there were, I guess, somewhere around 40,000 people and a handful of troublemakers who caused some of the damage that was done and so on. Basically, at all these events, 99% of those who are participating are peaceful protests and protesters, and they have they have a right to assemble and they have a right to express themselves. The Genoa situation was unfortunate. I'm not sure just exactly why or what went wrong there. It is unfortunate when anyone is hurt or killed in a situation like that, and the labor movement doesn't want to be a part of anything like that. But we think that people who want to form a coalition and come together, and in most of these recent situations, it's been a combination of trade unionists and students and environmentalists and people of faith and civil rights leaders all coming together in a peaceful way to express themselves. It is about time that the IMF and the World Bank are held accountable for issues that have been raised as a result of the expansion of globalization, and that more attention be paid to the developing world, to debt relief and so many other areas. And so we're going to be a part of it all.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to AFL President John Sweeney. The World Conference Against Racism, that's taking place in Durban, South Africa. The same day it opened, there was a massive march organized by COSATU, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, as they protest against privatization. Can you talk about the connection between the labor struggles in South Africa and the United States?
I think the connection is that that workers are concerned about whether globalization is working for working people, and whether it's the IMF and the World Bank, or it's conferences such as taking place in Africa, there has to be more attention paid to the issues of workers. I mean, here in our own country, we saw in a very successful economic period that workers really didn't get their fair share of the increased productivity and the success of that economy. I mean, wages only increased modestly, and that was in the later years of the successful economic period. Trade issues, I mean, no matter what major area of all our global economic issues are, the issues of workers have to be taken into consideration, and workers have to be at the table when these discussions are taking place.
Mr. Sweeney, in January of 2000, members of the Longshore Workers Union in Charleston, South Carolina, were peacefully picketing the use of non-union dock labor to unload a freighter. 600 state and local police in riot gear moved in on them. Union members were beaten up. Police, according to eyewitnesses, initiated the clash, and a riot ensued. 8 union members were charged. 5 are now going to trial for assault. You've gotten personally involved in this case. You've marched with them on the picket line. Can you talk about it?
Well, here are 5 workers who were involved in a labor dispute, and who are receiving some of the most horrible legal actions and personal hardships that we've seen in our country recently as a result of a labor dispute. These folks were arrested and were put in chains. They're about to go on trial, and the Attorney General in the state is proceeding ahead, the likes of which we have not seen in recent years. This is the United States of America, and human beings shouldn't be treated that way.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us on this Labor Day. If people want to get in touch with the AFL-CIO, where can they go on the web?
They can go to aflcio.com.org.
John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, today on Labor Day, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Stay with us.
You are listening to KPFA or KPFB Berkeley or KFCF Fresno. Stay tuned. 10 a.m. There will be Music of the World, a special program, very special program for this Labor Day. In the meantime, this is Democracy Now!
Your millions, mister. I can use no damn ring. I want the right to live, mister. Give me back my job again. I don't want your Rolls Royce. I can use your pleasure, yeah. I want some food for this engine. Give me back.
Give me back my job, Carl Perkins, here on Democracy Now! in Exile. Yesterday's Labor Day in the early years of this country. Labor Day was an occasion for demonstrations against low pay and harsh working conditions. The Knights of Labor had their first Labor Day parade in New York in 1882. 2 years later, they formally designated the first Monday in September as Labor Day. In 1894, Congress made it a legal federal holiday. This weekend, a new study found that workers in this country are working nearly 50 hours a week, more than a century after workers fought and died for the right to an 8-hour day. Well, we're going to go north right now to Canada. 30 to 40,000 workers and their families will march in Toronto today for the 130th Labor Day Parade, which is a day of public celebration for all workers. Around a third of the workforce is unionized in Canada, compared to only, less than 15% in the United States. Among them in Canada will be thousands of Canadian Union of Public Employee members. CUPE is the largest union in Canada with some 500,000 employees, 180,000 members in Ontario. It's a public sector union that covers municipalities, universities, schools, and hospitals. The Canadian labor movement looks extremely strong compared to the United States, but leaders say that the Canadian labor movement has a lot of work to do, especially under the new conservative government of Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. CUPE members say, in fact, it's time for the Canadian labor movement to adopt some of the policies of the AFL-CIO and go out and organize new workers. We're joined now by Sid Ryan, who is General Vice President for the Canadian Union of Public Employees. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Morning.
It's great to have you with us. It's not great sound since you're on a cell phone, but I think it's worth it because you're out there just about to begin the parade. Is that right?
That's true. We're in the middle here of about 35,000 workers who are celebrating Labor Day. Beautiful sunny morning here in Toronto.
Well, this day in Ontario, in Toronto, is considered one of the most political Labor Days you've ever had. Can you talk about how you've organized it and why it is so significant?
Well, we've been battling a conservative government now for the past 6 or 7 years in Ontario, and we've had our days of protest. We've had cities that we've closed down, created a degree of economic disruption. Let's get a message across to the government that people are very upset with their policies. We've moved into a new phase where we're 2 years away from an election, and now we're trying to politicize our membership, getting them to understand that they cannot afford another 4 years of this conservative government. So we're on the cusp right now of a massive mobilization where we're having meetings with our membership right across the province. And a lot of people are calling for a one-day strike. But, of course, a one-day strike cannot happen unless you do the work with your membership and make sure they understand the issues and make sure they understand
it's down there.
The goal at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
So anyway, that's what we're doing right now. And this parade today in many ways kicks off that campaign. In fact, as I'm speaking to you right now, I'm with a contingent of university workers who've been on the front lines in Seattle and
David,
in Quebec City.
Can you carry this for like 10 minutes?
They're wearing, symbolically, they're wearing gas masks and paraphernalia that...
Una, we hear you as Sid is speaking.
So it depicts the
but I will take it. I just,
you know, the fight that we're in with government, not just government corporations.
Una.
Hello.
Hi. Can you not speak as Sid Ryan is speaking because you're speaking over him? It's okay. Go ahead, Sid Ryan.
Okay. So what we're doing is trying to educate the membership around globalization and how that is coming to roost here in Ontario, many of the policies of this particular government. Like tomorrow, for example, we'll see the beginning of a 60-hour work week for those workers that don't have unions. Now, it's not mandatory, but what you'll do is when you go in to get a new job, you'll be asked to sign a document to see if you're prepared to work 60 hours a week. I mean, this hasn't happened since 1865 in this province, and it's a sort of an indicator of how we're being pushed down to the lowest common denominator on many fronts with respect to labor legislation. So we know it's imperative now that the only thing that stands between a decent standard of living and decent working conditions for workers, whether you belong to a union or not, is the labor movement. And we have to change our tactics a little bit and respond to the challenge.
Sid Ryan is General Vice President for the Canadian Union of Public Employees. And in the midst of him, you heard Una Padgham, who is also a Canadian Union of Public Employees member and a spokesperson for the Committee for a General Strike. The leadership of QP is publicly espousing bringing social issues to the bargaining table. Almost 50,000 union members marched in Quebec City to say that globalization is a local issue and that union members do care about its effects. Protesters today, or those engaging in the Labor Day March, are wearing gas masks and bandanas as a symbolic gesture to highlight the fight against corporate globalization, hoping to call for a general strike of all workers across the province to highlight the anti-union policies of the prime minister, as well as the push toward corporatizing and a growing anti-union sentiment. Una Padgham, you're one of the spokespeople for this group. Who are you marching with today in Toronto?
I'm marching with a lot of QP members who are out here who are saying that it's time, the time has come to make the connection between what's happening in the global economy with the liberalization of trade, with fiscal conservatism, and how it's affecting our jobs and our lives, and everything about the existence of working people and their allies.
What do you do in Toronto?
I work at a university. I'm a staff person, and I'm here with teaching assistants and contract faculty. We have city workers here. We have people who work in the schools as janitorial and support staff. We have people on drums, as maybe you can hear. I'm going to move away from them. So there are, QP represents a wide selection of union members who do a lot of different kinds of work.
Let me ask Sid Ryan how group of people that Una Padgham is with now, as they push to bring in issues of globalization, how that affects the overall membership of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, this whole issue of bringing social issues to the bargaining table.
Well, actually, I'm with the same group that Una is with, just a little bit off to her right. I see her on there in the cell phone. Actually, I would say that the university sector in Ontario right now are possibly the most mobilized sector that we've got. We represent people in municipalities, in school boards, in hospitals, nursing homes, and, of course, in universities. I'd say these are the most mobilized. They're more connected to the issues, I think, than most folks are. They've gone through, the university sector have gone through some very high-profile strikes in the recent past, and their sector is energized as a result of that. You've taken on the university sector, you've taken on the administration, and also, by extension, they've taken on the Ontario government, which are driving a policy inside of the university sector of raising tuition fees. And what QP is doing is trying to connect that question of tuition fees to the bargaining table, which presents a victory for all people in the province, not just for those unionized workers who won it. We actually managed to force the university to rebate to the student associations, or at least to the teaching assistants and the research assistants, rebates on their tuition. So we've connected their tuition fees to the bargaining table, which is the first time we managed to do that. By extension, we've also helped ordinary average working class families in Ontario be able to send their children into have a post-secondary education. So in that regard, I think the university sector probably gets it more so than the other sectors do at this moment in time. But we're using the energy of these young people to drive the agenda inside of QP. Drive QP to a more militant, more or less of center position, which is it's actually beginning to work. People are buying into it.
Una Padgham, in Canada, a third of the workers are unionized. In the United States, we're talking something like 13.5%. How does what goes on here in the United States affect you in Canada?
Sorry, I missed the last part of your question.
How does what's happening here in the United States affect you as workers in Canada?
Well, I think that we're seeing that the policies of the American government, as well as other governments around the world, are having a direct impact on workers in Canada, but we see it all over the place. It's in the United States, it's in Australia. We're seeing the privatization of social services. The free trade agreement of the Americas certainly puts pressure on Canada's social services, which has a drastic impact on the public employment sector in Canada, and which has a drastic impact on our ability to deliver quality Medicare, quality education, quality social assistance. These are all things that working people have fought for in Canada for a long time. And there's been huge changes in the past 10 years. We've seen the privatization of water. We're seeing the privatization of our medical services, the privatization of social services. The impact is huge. And we live in a world where the decisions of governments and of trade organizations like the WTO, like the FTAA, they have a very real impact on the everyday lives of working people. And union members here in Canada are saying, enough, we want some say in what's going on. Not only that, we want to connect to working people, the unemployed, the poor, and other places around the world and say, we need a say in what's going on.
Well, Una Padgham and Sid Ryan, I want to thank you very much for joining us from the Canadian Union of Public Employees, speaking to us from Toronto, where between 30 and 40,000 people are marching on this Labor Day. And that does it for today's program. You can mail us at mail@democracynow.org. That's mail@democracynow.org. Democracy Now in Exile is produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson. Anthony Sloan, our music maestro and engineer. Errol Maitland of WBIX.org, our spiritual and technical advisor. Special thanks to Miranda Kennedy. And thank you to Pacifica stations, especially KPFA and Roy at KPFK. And, of course, our affiliate stations around the country. We are Pacifica. We're broadcasting from DCTV in the historic firehouse of Engine 31. In the midst of a firestorm, what better place to be? In exile from the embattled studios of WBAI, the studios of the band and the fire, the studios of our listeners. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.